easily. They went down in the elevator to the lobby, where a uniformed security guard eyed them suspiciously. He glanced down at his desktop screen, then pointed at Stoner. "Who are you?" "I'm a friend of Mr. Tavalera's," Stoner replied genially. Glancing at his screen again, the guard muttered, "He's not allowed to leave the building without a specific order from Bishop Craig's office." "I know," Stoner said. "It's all right." The guard blinked several times. Stoner tugged gently on Tavalera's arm, and the two of them walked past him, through the building's glass double doors, and out into the morning, leaving the guard frowning with confusion in the lobby. It was raining, a fine misty drizzle. Tavalera saw people scuttling along the street in plastic rain parkas or gripping umbrellas. But he wasn't getting wet. Puzzled, he looked to Stoner and saw that the raindrops were bouncing off an invisible shield that surrounded him. "And me too," he realized. "The taxi stand is on the next corner," Stoner said, heading that way. Following him, Tavalera asked, "Where are we going?" "I thought you might like to visit your friends on the Goddard Habitat." Tavalera started to say, "But that's..." Then he caught himself. "I think it'd be best if you were safely away from Angelique and her cohorts," Stoner said. "At least for a little while." They reached the line of automated taxis. Stoner went to the first one and opened the door. He ducked in and Tavalera slid in beside him. "Destination, please," said the synthesized voice of the taxi's computer. "Hartsfield Aerospaceport," said Stoner. "We gonna take a rocket?" Tavalera asked, feeling disappointed. "No, but when the police check this cab's log, it'll show that we went to the aerospaceport." They drove in silence through the morning drizzle, out of the New Morality Complex and up onto the automated highway that led to the aerospaceport. Stoner turned to Tavalera and said with a smile, "When you get there, remember to say knock, knock." Chapter 10. And suddenly, Tavalera was standing on one of the winding brick walkways that threaded through the greenery of Goddard's landscaped interior. He was on a grass-covered knoll, high enough so that he had a clear view of the habitat's broad interior. Goddard was a massive cylinder, 20 kilometers long and 4 in diameter, rotating slowly to produce a feeling of Earth-normal gravity on its landscaped inner surface. Stretching out in all directions around Tavalera was the green countryside, shining in the warm sunlight streaming in through the long, bright windows that ran in strips along the length of the cylinder. Tavalera saw gently rolling grassy hills, clumps of trees, little meandering streams spreading out into the hazy distance, bushes thick with vivid red hibiscus and pale lavender oleanders lined both sides of the curving path that led downhill to a group of low buildings gleaming white in the sunlight, their roofs made of red tiles. The village overlooked a shimmering blue lake. Farther in the distance, Tavalera made out the checkered square fields of recently plowed farmland, with more clusters of white buildings beyond them. There was no horizon. Instead, the land simply curved up and up. Hills and grass and trees and more little villages dotting the scenery with their paved roads and sparkling streams. Up and up on both sides until he was craning his neck, looking straight overhead at still more of the tenderly, lovingly cultivated greenery. Tears misted his eyes. "I'm home," he said to himself with a rush of gratitude and joy. "I thought Earth was my home, but I was wrong. This is home. I'm back home at last." He started walking down the curving pathway toward the village, toward Holly. Stoner saw all that Tavalera's eyes beheld. He felt the rush of emotions that surged through the younger man. And within himself, Stoner felt the pangs of guilt. His wife spoke to him in his mind. "Did you have to do that?" Joe asked him. He sensed that she wasn't angry with him, not even displeased, so much as disappointed, unconvinced that her husband's action was truly necessary. "Yes," he replied. "I'm pretty sure that I did."
"Pretty sure?" Joe demanded. "You're putting him through a lot."
Stoner shrugged mentally. "I really don't know what else I can do."
"You're testing him,"
That's right. Stoner could sense Joe shaking her head.
I just hope he doesn't end up hating you when he finds out what you're doing.
Sister Angelique was in Archbishop Overmeyer's office, sitting at his broad desk of teak and brushed chrome, and learning that Shakespeare was right, uneasy lies the head that wears a crown.
What do you mean he disappeared? She said to the Archbishop's chief of security.
The image on her wall screen showed a man of middle years, his face taut and tanned, his sandy brown hair cropped short. He wore a suede jacket that fitted his wide shoulders perfectly, like a military uniform. He looked distinctly uneasy.
We're checking into it, sister.
Feeling slightly overwhelmed in the Archbishop's massive padded chair, Angelique said,
But he can't simply disappear. That's...
She caught herself as she realized that with Stoner virtually nothing was impossible.
The surveillance cameras show him eating breakfast. He looks up all of a sudden and...
Show me the imagery, Angelique commanded impatiently.
The security chief nodded, and the wall screen next to his image brightened to show Tavallera at breakfast. He suddenly looked up, nearly dropped his spoon, then got to his feet.
There's no sound, she said.
I know, we're working on that. Some sort of a glitch.
No, she replied silently, not a glitch. The Starman. Stoner. She watched Tavallera go to the front door, which opened by itself, and then leave the locked apartment. Cameras picked him up in the elevator, and then the lobby cameras showed him walking right past the uniformed guard there and out into the gray, drizzly morning.
He took a taxi to Hartsfield, the security chief said. That's where we lost him.
What do you mean, you lost him?
Looking even more uncomfortable, the security chief said,
The taxi's camera shows him getting in. Then the imagery blurs out. When the cab stops at Hartsfield, he isn't in it.
I see, said Angelique.
She almost laughed at the irony of it.
I do not see, she told herself. None of us can see anything that Stoner doesn't want us to see.
Somebody must have tampered with the cameras, the security chief was saying. Angelique barely heard him. We're checking into it. There must be a saboteur in the loop somewhere. We'll find him.
It took an effort for her to focus her attention back on the man.
We'll turn that building upside down, the security chief was promising. We'll find whoever is responsible for this, and when we do, I'll personally...
You'll do nothing, Angelique said. Drop your investigation. You're dealing with matters that are much too sensitive for your office.
The security chief's face reddened.
But if somebody's tampering with our surveillance systems...
The Archbishop will personally deal with this, Angelique said. It's not your responsibility, and no one will hold you to blame.
The man looked unconvinced.
I'll have the technicians check out those cameras.
Angelique nodded, thinking they won't find anything wrong with them. She cut the connection and leaned back in the overly large chair. Stoner, she said to herself. I barely thought about using Tavallera to control him, and he makes Raoul disappear. He knows what I'm thinking. Like a god, he can see into my soul.
It's a gift, said Keith Stoner, standing off to one side of the Archbishop's desk.
Rick. And who the bloody hell are you?
Rick Stoner smiled easily at the colonel, much as his father would have.
I'm an observer, he said.
The colonel wore the pale blue uniform of the United Nations peacekeeping force, with a Union Jack shoulder patch showing that he was from the United Kingdom. His thick red hair and bristling mustache convinced Rick that he was Scottish. Rick had chosen to wear a similar uniform, but without any insignias of rank or indication of nationality.
An observer? The colonel demanded, scowling with puzzled anger. I did not receive any notice of an observer coming here. And how did you get past the bloody guards?
They were almost touching noses in the middle of the peacekeepers' command center, a metal igloo crammed with electronics consoles that had been deposited by cargo helicopter on this barren mountaintop in the wild Hindu Kush Mountains of northeastern Afghanistan, not far from the Khyber Pass, where armies had fought for domination since long before the time of Alexander the Great. The command center felt uncomfortable.